the goal here is to convince someone to give you money. Okay, so that's what you're trying to do. Why this is a good, valuable proposition for them.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Health Technology Podcast. My name is Christine Minotto. I'm the director of the UCSF Roseman Institute at University of California, San Francisco. As a startup founder, the time will come, if it has not already, when you find yourself pitching investors. Your startup has a technology or a service that meets a need or solves a problem. And this means that you can tell a story to capture investors' interest. A good story will engage them and make them want to know more. How do you tell a good story for investors? On January 17, we heard from Caroline Corner, Managing Director for Medical Technology at Westwicke Partners. Westwicke is one of the largest strategic communication and advisory firms focused exclusively on healthcare. This recording is taken live from her presentation, Positioning Your Story to Connect with Financial Audiences. Enjoy this talk. And if you like what you hear today, please subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. The 2019 Roseman Innovators application is now open. The selected innovators will receive coaching and mentoring, variety of in-kind services, and the opportunity to pitch in front of our early stage investors network. Deadline to apply is Thursday, April 18. And for more detailed information, go to our website, www.rosemaninstitute.org.
My firm, Westwicke, was acquired by ICR on January 4th this year. ICR has been historically a public relations and investor relations firm focusing on every sector except for healthcare. So they've acquired my firm of about 40 people to be their IR healthcare arm of their business. So we're in the whole rigmarole of getting integrated there, which is pretty interesting. It means I can now offer public relations services to my companies, everything from branding help to crisis management to anything associated with product launch, media, Twitter, all of that stuff we now do under our PR part of our umbrella. So I've had that transition happen with my firm the last couple of weeks. So I joined Westwicke 3 years ago to work as a managing director for medical devices and diagnostics. I'm based here in San Francisco. I cover the west side of the country. Prior to that, I spent over 10 years on the sell side as an equity research analyst, covering medical device and diagnostic stocks. I was at banks, started at Wells Fargo, moved over to Montgomery. Then I was at Pacific Growth Equities and ultimately was at Cantor Fitzgerald before I left to go to Westwicke. I have a PhD bioengineering from Cornell, worked briefly at Eli Lilly, and at after school worked at Baxter Transfusion Therapies, which was really where I got my foot in the door with medical devices. So when I approached Wall Street looking for an equity research job, despite most of my training is actually in biotech, they had me be a medical device expert because that's how banking works. Little bit of knowledge is spun all kinds of ways. So thought I'd come in today. I was talking to Christine and her team before about helping with early stage companies think about investor positioning, how to make an investor presentation, who you're presenting to, and just trying to set you on the right track. If anyone has any questions as we go along, please raise your hand and ask them. I will repeat them back to you because we're being recorded. But I would really love to hear your thoughts as we go along so this can be as valuable as possible and that I don't end up talking above where you are. Or if you get bored, you can raise your hand and say that too. But please just do interrupt me at any time and ask questions, because as we move on from content, you might forget, or I might forget, you know, my train of thought when we're a few slides down the road. So please do raise your hand and ask any questions. Yes. Sure. What is investor relations? So investor relations, my job is helping companies position themselves in front of the investment community. So that includes everything. And we have a slide on this as far as what a financial audience is. Everything from investors, bankers, VCs, research analysts, and trying to tell your story in such a way that you can garner the right funding and you can continue to grow your business. So my day-to-day job, I work with private companies and I work with public companies, listed companies on the stock exchange. I help them put together their messaging. I help make introductions to the bankers so that they can get out there and raise money. I actually have a group in my firm that can help with $20 to $50 million raises as well, where we actually put your story in front of our investor database. I make sure your story is getting in front of the right investors. So I'm putting you in front of investors that are going to care about your story based on whatever criteria we know about the investors and what I know about your story. And in general, just trying to shepherd you along the path of your public company to get more funding and then ultimately either an IPO or an acquisition. And if you're a public company, I help with everything from investor quarterly calls. I write the scripts for those, Q&A, and schedule all of their meetings with investment bank conferences and any investor outreach and keep track of all that for them. So that's my job in a nutshell. Okay, so today I wanted to talk about positioning your story. You guys are all associated with early stage companies in some way with financial audiences. So this is what we're going to talk about today. The investor presentation, this is different than technical presentations or product presentations. Then we'll talk a bit about the audience who you're going to be presenting this to. Talk about how we build credibility and then a little bit on Q&A readiness and what you have to do there to be ready to actually engage beyond just using your presentation. So starting with the investor presentation, and sorry, I'm going to be relying on my slides quite a bit here. There's a lot of content in it, kind of a dry subject matter. That's another reason I would love to hear any questions as we go along. But yes, I did just attend the JP Morgan Healthcare Conference last week, all week, and this week has been a mad dash of follow-up for me. So while I did make all these slides myself, I'm going to refer to them as we go along. So why do we have an investor presentation? This presentation, also called a corporate presentation, is used to introduce your story to the financial audiences. So as I just mentioned, it's different than the materials you'll be using to introduce your company to doctors or patients or any other vested party. And the goal here is to convince someone to give you money. Okay, so that's what you're trying to do. Why this is a good, valuable proposition for them. The typical investor presentation, if you prepare it and read through it, should take about 20 minutes. So even though I'm presenting on 40 minutes on this for you today, your presentation should only be 20 minutes if you go straight through. Now, usually when you're at a conference or you're at a financial meeting of some time, they schedule you for 40 minutes, such as if you're at the JP Morgan conference, for example, doing one-on-ones with investors there. 20 minutes is fine, though, because ideas, you'll be conversational and they'll have questions and you'll be having a conversation about your company. You should also have a summary page to do a shortened version. As we go through this, we have an investment highlights page we recommend you doing. That way, if you just have someone for 1 or 5 minutes, depending, quick coffee or something, you can go through the highlights of your story. And you should also have a quick one-sentence story. If you're ever on an elevator at JP Morgan and you see someone that you should know, and you can say, "Hi, I'm from company X, and we just did this amazing thing." And they're like, "Wow, let me call you next week." Have a really quick hook as well. So building a compelling message, obviously, is the goal of this. Your financial audience is going to be hearing a lot of stories. Some of them are going to be just like yours, and you have to get your story differentiated quickly. You have to be able to tell it in simple terms so that they understand it quickly. There's sometimes, with your story, preconceived notions about your space. I mean, if you think about things like everything from heart disease to diabetes, people, even lay people, have opinions about the space and what they think is exciting or not. I have a client right now, a one-off biotech client for me, that's in the CNS space, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, etc. When we're putting together that investment presentation, we're acutely aware that the first thing when anyone mentions Alzheimer's is they're going to say, oh, you know, everyone's been working on getting Alzheimer's plaque out of the brain, and we know that doesn't work. And, you know, Alzheimer's has been a big fat waste of money. Yes, we know that. We know that it's a virtual graveyard of lost opportunity and lost dollars. But being aware of that when we're going into it and how we frame ours and how our story and how we're different from everything else in the graveyard is how we start. So make sure you know about any preconceived notions about your space going in. And then all of these items about complexity being a turnoff, keep it simple. Know what you're going into before you start. This is true whether you're talking to a generalist investor, someone that looks at all kinds of investors, or a very sophisticated healthcare investor. If you relate your story in a simplified manner, you'll drive understanding and hopefully a follow-up meeting or a follow-up call where you can dig a bit deeper with them. In general, to get someone to invest in a company, it's going to take 3 to 5 touch points, meetings, conversations. So your investor presentation serves as the basis for the first interaction, but also can be used for later ones as well as a starting point or a refresh. So we're trying to encourage these investors or your financial audience, we'll go through the other members later of that audience, to do more digging. So the goal is to get them interested in learning more. Also, sometimes you've talked to a company, talked to an investor, told them about your story, they're pretty interested, and then you see them 3 weeks later, they are going to remember nothing. They will remember very little. They'll remember, you know, a cool picture you might have shown them or something. You're going to have to refresh them. And so the investor presentation is also really useful for that. You can include appendices in your deck if you want for people that ask you really tough science questions in the presentation. That doesn't happen that often in initial conversations, but we can include some of that too. The investors are busy. They will forget what they talked about 3 weeks ago unless you keep putting things back in front of them. And you're trying to show them that this is a valuable proposition that they should be giving you money. We need to put together this presentation so that they can refer to it quickly and find the information that they need to make decisions about whether they're interested or not. So because of this, we have a specific format that we recommend, which I'm going to get to in a second. This slide is some highlights about what investors are looking for. Yes. Am I going to talk about how to find your investors and how to get them to invite you to a conversation? Yes. I am going to talk about that. So we'll get to that in a minute, and that's a good question. So this is what investors look for in general. They want to see your competitive advantage, and they want to hear your spark, your vision, why you're excited. You have to get them really hooked on your story. They're also interested in your market, how big that market is, and how you're going to penetrate it, how you're going to make them money. They want to know about your risks. Everything from the competition, who's out there already doing this, to do you have any regulatory challenges? Do you have any IP issues? Are you going to get sued? All that stuff. And then they also want to know, how are you going to grow these products? Okay. So this slide here is summarizing the key items that we recommend at Westwick for making an investor presentation. So there's three main sections: the executive summary, which is the introduction part of your deck. Then there's the support and science section, and then a financial overview. So I'm going to go through these different sections and what should be in them. You don't have to use this exact format, but it's good to start here. There are some situations where you can switch stuff around for certain stories. It's unusual to have a story that you can't fit into this format. Yep, we have a question. Do need to talk about your market. So the unmet market need is a crucial part when you're talking to financial audiences. It's the problem that you're going to solve, and that's the reason that they want to give you money. You're not going to launch a product that's going to get all of the market. You're going to have to say, we think we can start with this portion of this market, and this is why we'd be competitive in this. You know, like pan-cancer products, such as, I mean, I've had a client actually in this bucket where, you know, they're early stage and they're saying, you know, we'll be able to do this diagnostic for pan cancer. Every kind of cancer we'll be able to tell. Nobody believes that you're going to launch a product that will address every cancer or that would even could even be launched in a way that we could get all those patients. So it's very important to talk about how you will attack your market. But your point about big markets also, putting a big market up front is important too, because it means that you don't have to be perfect in approaching the market. You can get a little bit of success in a large market and still make a lot of money. If you have a small market, and we'll go through this in a bit, if you have a small market, you've got to demonstrate how you're going to get either really penetrated in that market or you're going to get some premium pricing, for example, so you can still make some money. So this executive summary part, that's going to have an elevator pitch, the hook, talk about your unmet market need. How big is this opportunity for your company and what's your solution? Support and science section, you're going to give an overview of your science, which is going to be very simplified and concise and is going to be understandable by someone with a college degree in English, not a scientist. And then we're also going to talk about why your solution is the best here. We're going to talk about the competitive space without disparaging your competition. And we're going to talk about how we will therefore be able to compete in that market. Then we move into the financial overview section. We'll talk about milestones and timelines in this section. We'll talk about financial projections and your capital structure, how you've already what money you've already raised, if you have some debt, et cetera. And then we will do an investment highlight slide, where we can go through five bullets. They can't help themselves but give you money.
This podcast is sponsored by IO Life Science, a Silicon Valley-based medtech design and development consultancy, transforming your technologies into unique healthcare solutions. For more information, you can visit their website at www.iolifescience.com.
All right, so the executive summary, it's kicking off your deck. We're X, we do Y. You should be able to summarize your company in a sentence. Sometimes complex diagnostic stories, you can't do it in a sentence because you've got a diagnostics. I work right now, most of my clients are diagnostics, but I feel like they're the hardest ones to really explain in a nutshell because you've got layers of explaining testing. Some companies here will do a mission statement slide. You know, those are kind of the feel good. This is how we're saving the world and saving humanity. Those are pretty attractive and can be used as a landing pad to chat about, you know, how you got where you are. And this is so exciting. Why, in a short, concise way? You'll have a company description here. You're trying to make a connection with your audience to hook them in. So we've got point to a large market. Diabetes, everyone knows that. Everyone's scared of it. Tug at a heartstring. Our market's not very big, but we've got these orphan diseases, and here's a little boy suffering from insert horrible disease. And then also we can show a better mousetrap where you have, you guys are familiar with this product, this type of product. Well, this is why our product is better and gets around problems that are known to be associated with the other product. Here's a couple of examples of mission statements. That's the rare disease slide. A lot of people don't know about rare disease, specific rare diseases. So that one, we tend to go the heartstring route. This example too is one of my clients in diagnostics. That one requires a bit more explanation to get where someone understands in a nutshell. So that one's a little bit more of a complicated intro page. So then you're talking about your market and where you fit. So financial audiences are going to judge you on the size of your opportunity, whether that's a size based on number of patients or size is based on number of dollars. We're going to demonstrate this large unmet need and why your product's needed. Markets that are best appreciated are ones that investors know: diabetes, cardiovascular, anything you have and like your grandma has that you're scared of. Those are perfect because people are like, oh, I'm interested in that. If it's a small market, you need to really underscore how you're going to get in there and take most of the market. If your market is crowded, you're going to have to show how you are differentiated. Again, do not disparage the competition. When a lot of times with the early stage companies, founding scientists and early stage leaders will think they have designed the perfect better mousetrap. And maybe they have, but you will get nowhere with an investor if you start disparaging established companies or, you know, trying to put down, you know, a product made by Abbott or something. Humility goes really far when you're an early stage company in conversations with investors and bankers, et cetera. When you leave the meeting, you want them to think you're really intelligent, but it's not because you've told them you're really intelligent, right? And that's a really big problem we see, I work with companies, you know, as early as Series B, sometimes even before that. And this whole issue of humility for C-level people is always a problem. It's something that, you know, I think a lot of scientists are very confident and should be, but it sometimes is rubbed the wrong way when you get in there and you start telling investors something about an established product or an established company. And half the time, you might be talking to someone that has invested in established company. And so you're kind of saying that they're stupid as well. So it's just best to be humble when you can. Here's some market size examples that we've used in decks. This first one is showing that there's 9 million women in the U.S. that qualify for cancer screening, and only 3% of them are done regularly now. The second one is a burns market, talking about how many burns happen in the U.S. And this graph on the right is showing how likely you are to die depending on the size of your burn. So these are things that are compelling to investors because there's a big market, lots of room to grow. So now you're going to introduce your product, explain your product with words. You can also put a picture in here. In general, investor presentations, we don't want to put a lot of cute pictures or cartoons and stuff like that. This is a very like dry presentation. But this is one thing where you do put pictures in here. Investors don't like you showing up with like bright colors, or they just want to look at it and flip through it and be able to see if it's a good value proposition. So this is the one place where a nice picture helps. You can include some data highlights when you're introducing the product. Keep it short. This is not a place for weird graphs or in-depth graphs. We can do some of those later. And you can also, this is also one spot where you can mention a bit about the competition. When you're showing your product attributes, you can show what else is out there. The best way to get people to appreciate your product is to show a competitive product and what they bring to the table, and then show your product and what you bring to the table, and let them draw their own conclusions about which product is better. And again, remind them again how this product fills that big unmet need. Layman's terms are important here. Again, our audience, we want to assume they have a bachelor's degree in liberal arts, which, by the way, is often completely untrue. And you're often talking to an MD, PhD who is way smarter than you. But the idea is that we're going to explain it to it succinctly, directly, and they will understand it regardless of where they fall on that spectrum. So here's a couple of products. This is one of my burn clients, picture of their product and how it works. And then this is a client of mine that just got acquired with their surgical illumination device. So now we go into the science overview. We're going to be succinct in this section. We are not going to go down any rabbit holes, and we're not going to like bombard people with data, but we are going to provide the data they need to know. Many healthcare investors, as I just mentioned, do have a strong scientific medical background, but they're also meeting hundreds of companies a year. So you need to be able to present that information in a way that they will understand quickly. Start from the basics. You can always speed up a conversation, but if you lose your audience, you tend to completely lose them forever. I was at a meeting with a former client at a VC down in the Valley one day, and we're presenting to an MD, PhD, and a PhD, and the CEO of that company, I could tell by body language, lost his audience about 20 minutes into the talk. They had missed something on the scientific explanation, and they just sat there for the other 15 minutes or so, nodding. And I could tell by the body language that they lost the theme already. But the CEO just kept doing the thing the CEO does and talk. And there was just no going back. And then follow up with them. Do you want to ask any more questions? No, they don't care about it. It didn't pique their interest, and it's game over. So, yep. Oh, sorry. Question. So how do you determine if someone's lost interest? Body language is key. I think if your audience in an investor presentation, if you get through the science part and they haven't asked any questions, that's a good sign that they don't understand what the heck you're talking about, because that's usually when they push back a little bit. It's usually pretty conversational where they would say, oh, you're doing a clinical trial and this is your endpoint. You know, they usually have questions there. If you feel like you've lost your audience, ask them. Their time's valuable too, and there's no point in forging forward if you've lost them. I would ask them. Most of the time when you're doing an investor presentation in a small group or one-on-one session, it should be very conversational. So this section, the science overview section, you can include several slides, including your data. An IP summary can go here, what your patents are. In simplified terms, you don't need to put the whole patent up there. You want to explain your trials, clinical endpoints in layman's terms, what this means in terms of how the data is going to eventually go through to FDA, key items that differentiate you in the market. And then also in this section, you can put in some graphs, to really demonstrate how you have been able to gather data so far, and attractive pictures of graphs. Keep them simple. And extra supporting data, like complicated graphs, put those in the appendix. They're only going to be a distraction while someone sits there and looks at this thing and is trying to figure out why you've got two y-axis and what this one is and what that one is. The complicated stuff put in the appendix. And if you get that MD, PhD asking you complicated questions, flip forward. Last thing on this slide, a lot of times founding scientists, especially when you have a platform technology, have so many exciting things they want to do with this. And they want to talk to you about other things beyond the main commercial focus that they can do with the product. Do not talk about that here. If you want, you can put a slide in the appendix there. But just because your technology can be used for something else, do not bring it up. It just confuses things. If people ask, by all means, answer the question, because a lot of times some of these sophisticated investors will say, couldn't you also use that technology for insert other way to use the technology? And yes, do have answers on the ready, but don't go there. It just confuses things. There's other ways to show that you're excited than to do that. And here's some science overview slides from a couple of decks that we've made. You can see it's a mix of, if you look at those graphs on there, they're pretty simple. We don't have big, fat, weird error bars or anything that's confusing. And the other thing is, if you put too much information on these and you do sit down with the scientist, they'll start picking it apart. And then you can get questions that you're going to be talking about for the whole 40 minutes. Next section, milestones and timelines. So this is arguably the most important part of the deck, because this, when you're talking to investors, is how they're going to grade you later. So you meet a company, you're explaining your story. This is what we're going to do by next December. They write that down. And when they meet you next December or next January, they say, did you do this? And if you did, that's good. You've garnered some credibility. And if you didn't, you have a problem. So you're setting up the timelines and the metrics that you're going to be graded against later. The main goal with setting these timelines, metrics, by the way, are parameters you're using to explain how your revenues are going to grow. So a metric could be, we will sell our product to X number of surgeons, or we will be in 12 centers of excellence by next July, for example. That would be something that you're going to be graded on later. So you're using a conservative approach, and not a ridiculously conservative approach, but a conservative approach when you talk to the people, the other people at your company that they think is realistic, and maybe just handicap that, you know, 20%, say. We want to underpromise and overdeliver, so that when you go to that investor that you've said, hey, we'll be in 12 centers of excellence by next December, and you see them in January and they say, how did you do? You can say, oh, well, we were in 15 by December and we were in 12 by October. That's how it should go. Doesn't always, but trying to plan ahead is critical. And get input from all of your management teams, all of your management team members on, are these goals realistic? I worked for a year doing internal IR for an industrial biotech company, and that company fell apart. It wasn't my fault, but it did fall apart the year after I left. And one of the big problems was that they were making industrial oils from algae. A problem they had was that the development oils were not the same as the oils in the sales forecast, which sounds very like a very simple problem, except that the two groups, manufacturing and sales, were not communicating enough. So when we were making financial forecasts, we were basing them on what sales thought they were going to be selling. The problem was manufacturing wasn't actually making that. So it can happen. This was a publicly traded company. It can happen to big companies, but get buy-in from all of your C-level people early on. This is your chance, while you're setting up your presentation, to set up these metrics, how you're building your revenue, so that you can tell your story how you want to tell your story. If you say, grade us on this, that's what they'll grade you on. Otherwise, you know, you're trying to tell your story based on number of surgical accounts you have, and they want to say, how many widgets did you sell last year? You have the opportunity here to actually frame the story how you want to be judged. So being thoughtful here is important. Here's some milestones and timeline slides. These are usually accompanied by another slide that has bullets of information. But you can see here we've got, you know, clinical trial milestones. And then also this one on the top has little orange dots that shows what they've achieved. And you can make one of these in your first ever corporate presentation, which already has stuff you've achieved. Feel free to, you know, pat yourself on the back and demonstrate what you have done. Just because you haven't had it in front of a financial audience doesn't mean you have to start from zero. Do toot your own horn a bit and talk about what you did when. Then we move to financials and cap structure. This slide, or usually one slide, you're trying to demonstrate that you'll be a good ward of whatever money they give you. So you show what you've spent money on in the past and what you generated with that money in terms of clinical progress or R&D progress. And then you can also talk about what you want to do with your current raise if you're raising money at this time, which usually people are. And then disclose here all of your capital structure. If you've got some debt, mention it. And also mention where you got your early stage funding. You know, we had angel investor or VC. Sometimes on this slide, later stage companies, you know, you mention that you have investments from, for example, like the OrbiMeds of the world. You're going to put that on there because then they think, oh, smart money's in there. I should give them money too. So you want to put some revenue and profitability estimates on this slide. We'll be making this revenue by 2022 or 2024, whatever it is. We'll be profitable by this time. Something that's a nice, attractive hook. Reimbursement. Any chance you have to put reimbursement in the slide where you feel like you can confidently talk about it, put it in. You're going to get asked about reimbursement all the time. How are people going to actually pay for your product? Having a well-thought-out reimbursement plan is critical in front of investors. You know, this is something that I'd say you can't spend enough time on as far as making a plan, but also being clear about what you want to say about your plan. If someone asks a question like you don't know about the timelines for reimbursement, for example, say, I don't know, we're still working on it. Do not fudge reimbursements. You will get called out on it and it will be bad. Reimbursement is a big topic in my world. There are certainly investors that won't take on any company with reimbursement risk. In those situations, If I'm putting a company in front of that particular investor that has doesn't have reimbursement yet, we're looking at it like an education process. So when we do have reimbursement, we'll go back.
Do you want your startup to receive coaching and mentoring, a variety of in-kind services, the opportunity to pitch in front of early stage investors, and be showcased at the 2019 Rosamond Symposium at UCSF? If so, application is now open for the 2019 Rosamond Innovators. Deadline to apply is Thursday, April 18. And for more information, please go to rosamondinstitute.org.
Investment highlight slide. So this is one. This is a slide you'll be able to flip to when you're having those short conversations. This is the synopsis of why the person you're talking to should be giving you money or helping you find money. These are five bullets that we usually use. Sometimes we mix this up a bit depending on the story. First bullet, describe your company succinctly. Second bullet, talk about the market and how you're the most special part of that whole market. Describe your product. And then bullet four, we usually have some additional highlights. So the kind of something really important from your story that differentiates you. That can be anything based on, you know, we already have reimbursement in place for this family of products, or you know, we are going to have 510K approval by June. That's where this stuff goes. And then bullet five, financial highlight. We've got cash for another 12 months, or we've got, our first revenues are going to be by the end of 2022, something like that. So this is all positive stuff on this slide. You don't have to talk about your product risks or anything on here. All positive. And just if someone flips it, they'll be like, oh, yeah, that's the company that's doing this. That's the company that's doing that. Positive stuff. It's a challenge that when we're working on investment highlight slides, we are, it's not just a rote task of summarizing. You know, we put a lot of thought into what do we want to succinctly say about our company. Yes. So is the goal to have something that they can refer to later or that they'll remember your speech? So usually how these go is you have this on your computer and you're in there talking and you're talking the investor or banker or analyst through the slides. In general, these aren't left behind. Sometimes they are, but it's meant to be a starting point for the conversation that's ongoing. Oftentimes, like in my seat, investors will send me their presentation, companies will send me their presentation ahead of our conversation. So I go through it and look at it and can ask questions to make it a little faster. And sometimes with investors, we do that. Sometimes, like if I'm doing a roadshow where I'm taking a company to a bunch of investors, probably 2 out of 10 will ask for the presentation ahead of time. Most of them will just go to your website and click around so they don't look completely uneducated on your story when you get there. But in general, they're expecting you to come in and present it to them. And most of these are put together with the idea that there will be a talk track. You'll be talking through it. It's not just going to be a completely standalone. Sometimes, like for international companies, we'll make it so it's completely standalone, but that's not usual. These are some things you can do to fine-tune your deck. Trying out your deck on lay people that you know is great. Friends without financial backgrounds are fine. With my client companies, I even run like the 2-minute synopsis on my kids, see if they get the drift, just when I'm trying to explain like something new. Your deck will have PhDs writing it. It does not need a PhD to understand it. Your goal, and we'll get to credibility in a minute, but your goal is to, you're building credibility here, so you want to be completely honest and upfront and clear. Don't use weird charts and don't use weird cross-study comparisons. You just end up going down rabbit holes. This is all going to be concise stuff. These are also some high-level things. Limit your graphics. Investors don't like lots of graphics. They like picture your product, but most of it's going to be bullets of boring text. It's just how it's done. Don't do weird slide transitions or anything. Half the time it's, you know, printed out and you're just flipping through it. And keep your color palette boring. It's, you know, you're usually in front of people that work in the banking world in some degree. So we're just boring. How often should you refresh your deck? short answer, anytime you have news, once a quarter, otherwise, anytime you've had, you know, new product introductions, FDA approval, anytime that you have something different to say, put it in there and update your deck. It's worth it to be ready to go with this thing. And check with all your C-level people that you're saying the right thing. Yes. Do startups have pitch decks on their website? Sometimes they do. I think my clients usually have it in the investor relations section of their website, the most recent one. Public clients are required to do that. Private clients will do it, but I'd say more often than not, they don't. It's also a way, if you put it up there, you're going to be graded constantly on what you've said last time, which is fine, except it also allows for zero error margin. So who's in the investment audience would include angels, high net worth individuals, family offices, the VCs, institutional investors. That's everything from big institutions to hedge funds, bankers. Why are private companies talking to bankers? Because they need to know your story early on, because they want to follow you for a while. When you need to raise money, Series B and on, they will help you. They can help you. But they also talk to someone else that's important, your natural acquirers. So educating the banks is always a good idea if you can get in front of a banker just to tell them your story. They will try to sell you on their services, but it's always good to know them. Investment bank research analysts, they start talking to companies around Series B time. They're the ones that pick stocks on the markets. They're the ones that inform their banks about which companies are worth them helping raise money. You want to know them too. And then there's also standalone research analysts who write research pieces on the state of the med tech industry, and you want to be included if they put in their report. So how do you identify investors? Related to a question we had before, you can hire an investor relations team to help you find these people. Otherwise, you have to network a lot. And going to any kind of investment banking meeting, great place to start. But you can also network at medical meetings as well. There's investors there. Trying to find lists of who's attending that's in the investment community can be challenging, but there's ways to do it. And then you can also just network with people you know. Investors like to know about new upcoming technologies in general, even just to get a 5-minute introduction. So because they don't want to be caught flat-footed if the next new thing comes along and they never met that company. But it's really an exercise in persistence. When you meet with investors, you've got to do your homework a bit. And when you're targeting investors, you need to do your homework. Specific investors will invest in specific types of companies. You're not doing yourself much good if you're approaching an investor that, and you've got a med tech company and they only invest in biotech, for example. So these are a bunch of characteristics that we consider when we're targeting investors. Investors are complicated in what they'll look at any time. You know, VC funds, sometimes they're only doing exits, or sometimes they're, you know, trying to not invest for a few months, and all kinds, they always have all kinds of weird excuses, we call it, but you know, there's timing for investments for them too. So they have, you know, metrics that they use themselves. This is an example of when we're putting together a roadshow for a company, we might look at a geographic investor target. If I know I'm taking a early stage company of the West Coast, those are a bunch of VCs I might try to hit up. We try to be pretty thoughtful at my firm, obviously, about trying to make best use of everyone's time. So if we're sending a company that's based in Boston or the West Coast, we're going to make sure we're hitting all of the people we can. So where are them? You can research the investment funds. Look at who has invested in your competitors is an easy way to start. Obviously, you're going to get later stage investors there, but you never know if you can start a conversation that way. Leverage your relationships or pay for targeting help. And around Series B is when people do pay a lot for targeting help, where they engage a IR firm. Some PR firms do it as well. Public relations are usually focused more on media, but some of them have investment or investor lists as well. Networking events are great. They can be hit or miss. Investment banking conferences are great if you can get an invitation to one of those. Yes. Will people that invest in your competitors also invest in you? Very possibly. if they're a large enough fund, if they've decided diabetes is the next big thing, they're going to want to take several shots on goal. So we do see definitely investors. The other thing too is sometimes what's viewed as your competition at one point sometimes becomes your acquirer later. If they're invested in that company that's going to acquire you down the road, it's good that you've had that conversation. It's a way to make an introduction. Banking conferences are great. If you can get into a banking conference, they'll set up a whole day of one-on-one meetings with you, with investors. And then planning around conferences, we do it with our clients at Weswick. We have a big investor relations calendar, and we're saying you're going to go to the BTIG conference here and you're going to the Canaccord conference here, and we're going to make sure you have good days there meeting lots of investors. Yes. So the easiest way to get invited to a banker conference is to know the bankers. So when you have a story, I position stories in front of bankers a lot, especially like early stage companies. We do bake-offs to pick the best banker for our clients. And the bankers we're very friendly with the banks. They're our biggest source of referrals at Weswick. They have companies that they've met. They need help with their messaging. They'll send them our way. That's the easiest way to get invited to a banker conference. The research analysts also get to invite people. So if you can go to sometimes a research analyst, you can find them at scientific meetings. They're often at the like American Heart Association or ACOG or whatever. They'll be at those meetings. They're hard to track down, but that's part of the fun. It's a difficult thing to do. It's why we have lots of clients. We help people with targeting. Sorry, investment bankers. Yes. Although I'm only talking about investment bankers today. Yes. But science and medical conferences are good. Don't pay tons of money to attend investment or banking, quote unquote, conferences focused on the retail market. They're in general a waste of money. And sometimes there's situations where it makes sense to get in front of a less sophisticated audience, but I in general, don't do it. What to do when you get a meeting? Do your homework. Know who you're going to talk to. You want this to be conversational. Find out where they went to college and stuff like that. So if there's anything you can do to make it a little bit more friendly, do it. So much of this is based on relationship building. You've really got to know these people, and anything you can do to break the ice and make them more interesting, make them remember you, is good. Review your list of recent investor questions so you're not caught flat-footed, and then be on time and be humble. Like I said before, you've just got to go in there and, you know, you want your presentation and what you're telling them to dazzle the investor, but it's not because you've told them it's dazzling. It's because you've showed them it's dazzling. Follow up. Stay in front of them. Find a reason to ping them if you've got someone's card. Oh, I'm in your neighborhood. Let me give you an update. We've had this amazing piece of news. Did you catch our press release? Stay in front of them. They have short memories. And keep up on your Q&A. Review your Q&A every now and again. So if you get those questions, you have your answers ready to go. Building credibility is key. This is the whole process of getting in front of an investor, showing them what you're going to do, then delivering on that. So next time they actually think you're a credible, responsible person.
This podcast is sponsored by IO Life Science, a Silicon Valley-based medtech design and development consultancy, transforming your technologies into unique healthcare solutions. For more information, you can visit their website at www.iolifescience.com.
Yes, and I may have skipped over it on another slide, but taking meetings with anyone from the financial community that will take a meeting to get feedback on what you're doing is a great way to go. And, you know, a lot of what you're doing is a form of education over time. So even if you're not looking for money right then, educating them what you're doing, laying out the milestones so that when you go back in and see them again, you've got a more mature story and they can see your progress is good. But also getting feedback, like they might tell you like, that's a terrible idea. Why would you say that? Or, you know, and listening to that, because they see these stories, like I said, hundreds a year. And just being, going back to the humility part, being the kind of person that can be receptive to the negative feedback on your deck. I mean, I get early stage companies come in and they'll be like, here's my investor deck. And it'll be like 60 slides long. And no one is going to sit through 60 slides. I mean, maybe your mom, but like, that's about it, right? 60 slides is too much for anything. So getting feedback and listening to it is key. So anytime you can get a meeting and have someone be an audience, I definitely go for it. Credibility is earned over time. You're laying out these milestones. Sorry, it's a question. I'll just finish this thought. It takes 3 to 5 meetings to get someone to give you money, and that's for a later stage private company. You've really got to, you know, work on this and keep in front of them. If you miss your target or milestone, you're going to lose credibility. If you miss your target or milestone and then act like A, it's no big deal, or B, it wasn't your fault, you're going to lose a ton of credibility. So when you do miss a milestone, and it does happen, own it, find out what you did wrong, and make a plan for how you are going to fix it and lay out updated milestones and metrics. Is there a question? So where does the ask go in this presentation? In your investor presentation, the ask goes at the in the financials end part, where you'll have Series B and you'd say something like, we're looking for Series B funding now and we're going to use this proceeds for X, Y, and Z. And that would be in that financial highlight slide. But that's an important thing to put a lot of thought into, actually, because, and it will, if you do it right, it will flow into the conversation with when you just talked about what you did with your angel money or your Series A money or whatever money you're building on. And if it's your first time money, you're saying we're looking for money for the first time to do this. So key here, own your mistakes. Hitting the milestones and metrics. We kind of talked about this before. It's a more in-depth slide, but you want your metrics to be straightforward, simple. You're going to get graded against them later. You don't want to be put yourself in a position because you haven't thought enough about it that your metrics have to alter. For example, if you're saying, oh, we're going to be in, you know, 12 centers by next year, and then next year rolls around and you said, oh, well, we're in, you know, 6 centers, but really they're like 12 centers because, you know, you need to own these. You need to think about what you're going to actually do and make sure you deliver on them. Again, get the gut check from the other people in your company. Also get the gut check from your existing investors. Ask them, does this sound like it rings hollow? You know, best laid plans sometimes go wrong. You really can probably survive about one big screw up every 2 to 3 years as far as missing a milestone. But if you miss multiple metrics, you're just going to die on the vine because your credibility will be shot and no one will give you money because they think you're just going to waste it. It's kind of like parenting, right? There's a lot of similarities, actually. Be humble, accept blame. These are other credibility builders. Just clear communication, being candid, forthright. If you seem sneaky or underhanded, they're not going to give you money. And being consistent in your messaging. You can do a new website update. You can do a new investor presentation format. You don't want to do it every 3 months. You want to iterate your presentation, but not a complete overhaul. And then last section, Q&A readiness. So when we're talking to investors and they're coming at you with questions at the end, write down the questions because being able to counter pushback in these conversations is key. And you want to do it in a way that's well thought out and you're not caught flat-footed. Practice your Q&A. I do this even with, you know, multi-billion dollar market cap CEOs, where we getting ready to do an earnings call, we go through Q&A and I'll throw questions at them, reword it different ways, and they're giving their nice state answer. So they're not, when they're on their earnings call and they've got a research analyst from JP Morgan throwing the hardest questions that they can or trying to trick them into giving a bit more information, we've got our rehearsed speaking points. And the more you rehearse, the less rehearsed it seems. That's how it goes, right? So if you rehearse your answers, and you know what you're saying, it will be nice and smooth when you're giving your actual answers. Otherwise, you sound like you're reading from a script, and that also makes you seem not credible. If you don't know the answer to a question, say you don't know and use that as an excuse to get back to the investor. And then in preparation, get questions from as many different types of people as you can. You'll find that people tend to ask the same question over and over in different ways, but that's a way to identify a leading question and also how you're going to best answer it. Then relax and be conversational, which is hard when you're approaching someone and trying to ask for money, but if you're prepared, it will be easier. This is a list of some kind of sample investor questions that we get. I just threw those on the end for people to look at, you know, as far as what investors might ask you. A lot of times you see the ones about how did you spend your last fundraising proceeds. They're going to want to know that you're a good ward of their money. So a lot of these are focused on how you're going to make money and how you're going to spend their money. So that is all. Any other questions remaining? I'm glad to answer them. Yep. Who's going to care about your business plan? VCs will. Bankers, when they're doing a sizable raise, will want to see your business plan as well, because if they're going to get out there on the road in front of investors and have their name behind your raise, they're going to want to make sure every T is crossed and I is dotted in your business plan and your revenues make sense. But the business plan, so my clients' business plans, I see them, you know, a few times a year usually. They inform the information in the investor deck. So we wouldn't want, for example, a business plan usually includes revenue numbers that are higher than I would ever put in an investor deck, because we haven't handicapped it. And, you know, the business plan's what they really expect they're going to do. We want to say a little bit, you know, 10% less than that, so we can continue to dazzle them. But business plans, I think VCs will look at business plans. Is that right? Do they? Not really? I don't know. I not usually. Yeah, it's bankers that would, the bankers will look at it before they take you on as a client. And in, it's also not the whole business plan. It's just parts of the business plan. Your IR team will look at your business plan. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, we will work with earlier stage companies too. So we have like our fully loaded public companies that pay us X number of dollars a month. And then we can take smaller project work for companies that we're interested in. Like I've got a Series B client right now that I'm helping with messaging. I'm not doing everything for them that I would do for a full service client, but we can also work with any client we want. Usually it's going to be a client that we think is headed towards bigger things. Like we're not going to work with a new company that we think is just going to be acquired immediately, for example, like something that's going to get, you know, purchased by a labs agent supply. It's going to get bought by a big agent company or something. But yeah, we can be flexible. I mean, some of it's capacity and how much workload we have as well. But certainly, I think on the biotech side, there's quite a few earlies that are involved there with some of my partners on the biotech side. But yeah, I mean, a lot of times with early stage companies, we talk to them, we get to know them, we let them send their investor presentations over. We will provide some high level insight on what they should be doing differently kind of thing, and just kind of keep the relationship going for a bit and see where it goes. So anything else? Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you all for coming.